your product was inserted and has enhanced our project greatly. And I don't think that there's another one in the world that is installed like ours.
Hello, and welcome to the Daktronics Experience Podcast. I'm Justin Oxner here with Matt Anderson. Today, we're joined by Paul Chandler. He is the executive director of the Germantown Performing Arts Center. He's going to share his role at GPAC, their unique video display system, how it's been used for their events, and much more. And we're here today with Paul. Paul, how are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
And Matt's here too. Matt, how are you doing over there?
It's a good day today, Justin. Thanks.
We're down here in the podcast bunker, 6 feet apart across the table here.
Yep.
But Paul, we'd like to talk to you today about Germantown Performing Arts Center. Can you give us a history of your position and kind of how you got to where you are and what you do there?
Certainly. And thanks for having me on today. We have become quite a fan of Daktronics over the last couple of years. So I'm a department head with the city of Germantown. My title is executive director of Germantown Performing Arts Center. We call GPAC quite often. And I oversee the Performing Arts Center, which has an indoor theater with 854 seats and a little black box theater called the Watkins Studio Theater, a little 100-seater. And then we just completed construction of an outdoor performance space called The Grove at GPAC.
Okay.
And that's where we got involved with your company, Daktronics, to install that product out there outside of the outdoor space.
Awesome. And can you maybe dive in a little bit? I always call these origin stories. Justin
mm-hmm. yep.
knows I like comic book stories like this. So can you maybe just give us a little bit? Now, how did you get to your position now? Have you been in that industry kind of the majority of your professional career, or how did you end up there?
I'm a bit of an interesting story. GPAC was constructed and opened in 1994, and I came 9 months later in 1995 as the assistant to the director.
Okay.
I was the youngest applicant. There were 127 applicants.
Wow.
I was the youngest applicant, and I was hired. I was 28 years old.
Nice.
And by the time I was 30, I was promoted to assistant director, or in the city's case, an assistant department head, which was, you know, quite a jump in salary for a 30-year-old, mm-hmm. which was fantastic.
Yeah.
For a 30-year-old with a wife.
Yeah.
And soon to be growing family. And then I worked here for about 6 years, and then it's funny. I used to say, I was like, I'm not going to grow old, gray, and die in Germantown. Yeah, I'm going to go conquer the world. And so I left and went to the family business, which was a pretty large ad agency that my father had founded, 30 years prior.
Okay.
And so I worked there for 2.5 years. And, I didn't love the ad agency business. It also can be a little tough to be the owner's son. and it was also, 9/11 had happened.
Okay.
And, it really changed the ad agency world, and just the economics in and around. And so, without getting too far into that, I had been consulting with the Memphis Botanic Garden to create an outdoor concert series. And so I elected to leave the ad agency, and I partnered up with some partners and we created an entertainment industry company called National Talent. It turned into a company called Resource Entertainment Group. And over 9 years, we grew that into a really large entertainment company that did a variety of things. We were booking agents, or what one would call a middle agent,
okay.
for touring shows. We produced a lot of corporate events, a lot of private events. We had casino clients, hotel clients, NBA clients, private individuals, who want to do big private events. We got up to, I think at our peak was 1,200 bookings a year.
Oh, man,
yeah, it was a beast. Yeah, we had about anywhere between 4 to 6 employees, and we were running and gunning.
In that
time frame, GPAC was under was between directors, and they contacted me, and I came over kind of as a contract with the private company, and was the interim executive director for a little over a year. And so then fast forward, another opportunity came here. I was ready to leave the partnership. Things had changed within the company. And so I came over here 8 years ago. And so my short version of that is I've worked here for, about 15 years.
Yeah.
Collectively 15 years, but three different times in the last 26 years. If you can follow the math on all of that.
Yeah.
So, and then lastly, prior to that, I've always been in the entertainment sector. I started as a film production PA when I was 18 years old. And between 18 and 20 something, I worked on 348 productions. So sometimes, it was a movie or a lot of TV commercials and a whole bunch of music videos. I would drive to Nashville and work on crews. And
oh, cool.
But I was like burned out at 25,
Yeah.
Cause you can work 18, 19. I think 20 was the 20 hour day was my longest work day.
Yeah. That's it.
But it was pretty, it's pretty exciting. That was back when, Garth was starting and Alan Jackson was a big deal and they were shooting a country music video every day. So I tell you all this because film production or video production is where I got my start. And I've always liked it and gravitated towards it. But, it was tough on me as a young man. And I was like, I couldn't do that. I'm not going to do this forever.
It's good experience for the moment, right?
Yeah.
It was priceless. I think about it a lot. I learned how to, talk to the truck loader and then this chief marketing officer of a major corporation, all in one breath. And I use those skills today that I learned, back in that environment. So it was really valuable to me.
See, this is why I love origin stories, Justin. This is amazing.
Right.
I mean, hearing about your different experiences and your background, it's no wonder then why when you applied and you were one of the youngest applicants, you got that because of that experience. But then even after that, I mean, with the agency and then this partnership thing you started up, you got a lot more experience. So maybe when you came back to the GPAC, how did you incorporate kind of all that stuff? Because I think this will kind of tie in eventually, how does Daktronics come into here with the video board and whatnot? But maybe just let us know, how did you take those experiences maybe into your role when you came back?
8 years ago when I came back, that means I would have been about, 42 at the time. I wasn't old enough to reflect on, who I was and how I got here. It's only been in the last 5 or 6 years that I've like, I'm really good at what I do. Cause everything, I feel like my decisions are really natural. Mm-hmm. And I think they're good decisions. And it wasn't until most recently that I'm like, I'm like a collection of all my experiences, and I make these decisions based on that vast knowledge of these components that entertainment and marketing, video, and dealing with people. I had to navigate through so much of that in my youth, and I feel it's very, very natural today. And so I guess what I'm trying to get at is I'm very self-aware. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm in the sector I was destined to be in because the decisions we make decisions now. And I'm like, we were so right about that decision. And we can talk about that in a minute, how that ties into your organization. I think you might find it interesting.
Yeah. It sounds like you ended up in the right place at the GPAC there, bringing all your experiences together. You mentioned a couple of the different specific venues within the GPAC. What kind of events do you guys hold in those different venues?
Sure. We have three core businesses. We're a presenting organization, we're an educator, and then we're a rental facility. So on the presenting side, we act much like most PACs, performing arts centers. where we book a season, we sell single tickets, we want to sell subscriptions, and the subscribers turned into contributors, contributors turned into board members. I think this is important to say. I'm a government employee, and I hate to backtrack, but this is important. I'm a government employee and a department head with a city. So I sit at the table, you know, with police and fire and IT and parks.
Okay.
And HR, and help with the management team of the overall city. And a nonprofit has a contract with the city to manage the activity in and around the Performing Arts Center.
Okay.
So I have a nonprofit board, and then I have a city administrator that I report to. So it's a unique model. It's not unusual. I mean, there are a few models like this around the country. Mm-hmm. There certainly aren't many in the South, and there aren't any in my market. So what we do here at GPAC, we're a presenting organization, an education facility, and a rental house. So we present dance, symphony, jazz, Americana, blues, concerts, if you will, in the main hall.
Okay.
And that's anybody from, you know, to give you the heavy hitters over the years, Yitzhak Perlman and Yo-Yo Ma and Lyle Lovett and Jason Isbell and Keb Moe and Dr. John and all kinds of acts on the main stage.
Cool.
Dance companies, Albany, the American Dance Company, Palabolas, New York City Opera, when it existed. And it goes on and on. So really, really high level international touring artists. And then in the black box, we do have a lot of educational programs in there, music, dance. And then we turn our black box into a little jazz hall. So jazz has become, in my opinion, particularly in this market, quite popular. I think it's directly related to the baby boomers that have a lot of discretionary income and time. They're navigating, and they kind of grew up with jazz in their ear. So we turned the black box into a little jazz club, several nights a year. They're very successful. And then, we have the outdoor space, which we'll talk about in a minute, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I'm even thinking about, you know, within those different areas you mentioned, you have a nonprofit board, the city.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? I'm just kind of curious when it comes to, you know, booking people coming in there. Is it mainly on the kind of the nonprofit side? It's up to them to fill the space, or how does the city get involved?
So, yeah, the city just lets us, you know, myself, my team, and the nonprofit board manage the program. They really don't get involved with the programming in the programming selection. You know, they just don't want anything. We don't do, you know, bad language kind of shows.
Yeah, they don't step in and say, this doesn't look good for the city. Don't let that person in.
Yeah, they don't really do that. But Germantown is a much more modern thinking city these days. But we just, you know, we provide really, really high quality touring entertainment. We hire locals as well. And then on the rental facility side, you know, we're the home, not the home, but we have a lot of friends in the market. So the local opera company performs here quite often. Local symphony performs here quite often by renting the facility. And then we have a partnership. We have a resident chamber orchestra called Iris Orchestra, which is, which we house here. They perform only here. They're an exceptional orchestra. The music director is Michael Stern, who's quite accomplished. He's the principal conductor of the Kansas City Orchestra. He's the son of the great Isaac Stern, who the great violinist who saved Carnegie Hall and was, you know, probably one of the most famed classical musicians to ever live, is his son. And, that orchestra was created here 20 years ago, and all the players come from around the country. It's quite a unique model. And it's a really, really high-level product called Iris Orchestra, and that's our resident orchestra and certainly our partner and our primary presenter of classical music at this space.
Right, and I'm thinking maybe a segue kind of into the outdoor area is, right. I'm imagining, you know, over this last year with everything going on with COVID-19, how has that affected the business, and has this outdoor space kind of helped with all of that?
Sure. As it relates to the outdoor space and where we are now in this COVID era, it has saved our tail. For, I'm telling you, I was trying to go all the way with that phrase, but yeah. I'm telling you, so here we are, you know, a shuttered indoor theater. We were celebrating our 25th anniversary. We had a blockbuster season. We had sold more tickets in 1920 season than ever before. We had more contributions than ever before. We had a sold out annual gala at, you know, $5,000 and $10,000 tables. We were coming to the end of all of that because, you know, our performance season kind of ended in April, the official one. And so, we were rocking and rolling. We were doing 249 gatherings of people for different purposes a year.
Nice.
Right. And think about it. And we were dark pretty much in the summer, mm-hmm. you know, just yeah. summer camp. So all that's in, you know, basically 9 to 10 months. And so, the Grove was under construction.
Okay.
Right. And so we were excited about the opening of that. And we were going to move from this, you know, successful 25th anniversary season and then go open go right into the Grove. And we were a little terrified. I'm like, oh, how are we going to open this thing? And who are we going to use? And are we going to get more staff? And there was a plan back then. And the plan was gone. Yeah. So then we were shut down in COVID in March. I think we closed on March 13th.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Friday the 13th. I remember it well.
That's when we got sent home that Friday as well. So that's when they told us that Daktronics going to be working from home for a while.
Yep. So you're still home, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yes, we are. Yep. We thought it was crazy when they said maybe through April. And we're like, no way it's going to go through April.
Here we are.
Yep. Yeah, no kidding.
And so all the employees were sent home. I stayed here because there's a construction going on and, you know, they have questions throughout the day on any given day.
Right.
And we finished it in May, and in June in this market, restrictions began to loosen and our leadership, our mayor said, you know, the Grove is going to be, can be a part of the reopening of this community. Mm-hmm. And the city administrator was like, you know, if you can provide a service that's incredibly safe, then do it, get the health department's approval. And so we did. And on June 4th, we were hosting gatherings of 10 people, right? So we were doing it with our contributors and their families.
Okay.
And we were touring the Grove. And then as the restrictions began to loosen, we went from 10 to 25 to 75 to 125 to then what we currently are, our capacity is 300 approved by the health department. And it probably could be more. It's a 1200 capacity outdoor facility, but we think 300 is really comfortable. So the conclusion to that was between June and November 14th, we produced 82 events.
Wow.
Incredible, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so it was exhausting. I'm really proud of my team. I can just tell you producing events in a COVID era is very difficult. It's not mm-hmm. just the logistics of safety, but you're dealing with the mental, best way to say, maybe the mental load
right.
that comes with this, you know,
yeah,
it's not just,
sense.
You know, Mrs. Nussbaum thinks the wine's bad, you know,
right.
It's COVID reopening is incredibly difficult and trying, but we did it. And I'm proud of it. And the Daktronics product was a really big part of it. We were able to show performing art related content on the video wall that's in the Grove, mm-hmm. which was, I can honestly say, 80% of those 80 events.
Okay.
Certainly every event involved the video wall, but most of it was, you know, we just took performing art related content like, that we could get the license for,
right.
which, you know, that in itself has its difficulties.
Yep. Yeah.
Gosh, it feels like 100 years ago. I can come back and kind of give you, you know, an example, but we would go to, Swank is like an online source for your firm that helps you get the license approvals to show certain films. So we would do, you know, the documentary on Pavarotti,
oh.
or we would do a concert by a jazz performer, or we would We would do, I'll have to pull up the list and give it to you, but it was all licensed and approved, and it was all performing art related. Right. I will confess, on the 4th of July, we had like a animated movie that was kind of fun for the kids. And we had a little series called Dine Out in the Grove, where we did a few food related movies, like Chocolat.
Oh yeah.
And so we do Chocolat, and then we would bring in a restaurateur to prepare boxed meals and let the restaurateur talk to the audience. And so we wanted to be part of the, you know, helping help salvage the restaurant industry, which is taking its toll everywhere.
Yeah.
And so we were sort of connected the two of those together. It has been delightful. We had zero, to our knowledge, zero COVID related cases to the series, to the performances. We hosted 9,400 people throughout 20. Mm-hmm. And we had a surprising 26% of the folks who came never bought a ticket from us ever before.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Which is totally awesome.
So thinking about this, you brought in these events and you did what you could with the display to kind of show some things outdoors. So you got to imagine, and in the summertime, people were kind of getting antsy after being inside for quite some time, probably looking for different things to do to get out. And like you said, you even provided an opportunity to help the community with the restaurant business and everything like that. So it really kind of gave people something to look forward to if they were feeling comfortable to go outside again and go to an event type of thing, and then also help the community at the same time with the restaurant thing.
Certainly. We had people that constantly would either email us or, you know, tell us out in the venue, like, thank you. This is the first time I put on a dress in months.
Right.
I feel safe here. We appreciate you. This is the only thing I feel comfortable doing. We got that on a consistent basis, and it just helped us, you know, help motivate us to do more. We got to a point where we had a 5-week period where we did 5 events a week. And I have to give my staff credit. You know, I lost about 30% of them during all this. I basically lost all my part-time.
Oh yeah.
And then a couple of people left. Why you would leave a job in the midst of a pandemic, I have no idea.
Right.
So my team was out there producing all of this, so including me. So I was moving trash cans, signing people in. You know, we didn't sell physical tickets, so we would just check people in. But, you know, I was quote unquote tearing tickets.
There you go.
So was my director of marketing, my head of my director of development, the venue director, the business manager. We were ushers. We were maintenance support. We shared curtain speeches. We were greeters. I was a bartender twice.
Okay.
I recall. Yeah. But we did it. And looks like we're about to do it again in the spring.
Sounds like you all pulled together to make it successful there. Everybody doing whatever they had to do to make it work.
And probably pulled on all your past experiences, like you mentioned.
Oh, yeah,
you
definitely.
You started thinking of that more and more. Like, I got to imagine that helped you a little bit with some of this.
Oh, certainly. I see my past experiences come in, you know, particularly in a situation like that. You know, being in this industry for that long and doing every role is very, very valuable. You know, I was a PA. I know how to wrap cable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know how to load a truck. I know how to sell a ticket. I know how to greet somebody. All of that comes into play. I think it helps me be a good leader. And I think it's always important, you know, to get into the trenches with your team.
And to be a bartender, right? Like that's, I think you could be definitely doing that.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Matt, you need to help out and be a bartender. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Twisted your arm.
Yeah.
It's a fun job. I'm just not real fast. You know?
All right. So I'm going to go back to the outdoor venue and the video board. It was a 6-millimeter display that we helped you out with there. And I understand it's on a hoist. So can you guys move that up and down and around? Has that helped with some of the events you were hosting?
Yeah, it's approximately 20 feet tall, 30 feet wide, and it lives in the center of the stage. So if you can imagine, the Grove stage is all black, right? So it's this black box, and the Daktronics wall lives at the rear, right? So upstage, and then it moves on a hoist downstage to the front. So then it's basically the center of the stage, framed by the stage. So this is kind of my terminology as we were thinking about it. It becomes the performer, right?
All right.
It becomes the show.
Okay.
And so I think, let me back up and kind of tell you the story I told 1,000 times.
All right.
Why did we do that? And how did the idea come from? So I knew we were working in the early stages of designing the outdoor, and I was at a little venue in on 30A down on the panhandle of Florida, and I went to a place called The Hub, and The Hub was a little outdoor space. It's got some food trucks, it's got some restaurants, it's got an AstroTurf little fake grass area in front. It's a vacation destination place, and they built it in and around a development that didn't get off the ground. It got halted due to something, I don't know, housing crash probably. And they wanted to bring attention to the area, as I understand it. And so it's got a sizable stage. It's very, very deep. And they had this sort of, I don't know what it's not your product. It's a medium resolution, permanent video wall. And it's pretty well displayed. It displays pretty well at night, but certainly not during the day. And so I'm there, you know, and they're just putting concert movies on, probably unlicensed, I must add, because they were having like Zac Brown live at the Ryman.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't our display.
Right. And so I'm looking at it, and it's I'm like, okay, well, there's Zac Brown, 20 feet tall, and you know, this is not a knock to the industry, but okay, well, there's no hotel, and there's no fee, and there's no rider, and there's no backline, and this place is completely packed, and but it's it's a vacation place, so there's kids running around, there's $12 margaritas, and they're not taking it too seriously, but they're being entertained. I'm like, well, that's really interesting, but I wouldn't do that at our place, because first of all, it kills it when it's 40 feet deep. This thing was maybe 30 feet deep.
Okay.
So you shouldn't ever put, I'm a big believer about the energy in a room, and so you can't make that giant separation between audience and performer. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of parked that and went on my business. And then I went to the FedEx Forum, which is the big arena, the Go Grizz, Memphis Grizzlies play in NBA team, which actually my prior company, we worked on the grand opening of that thing.
Okay. Nice.
It's a big important product, important project for Memphis. I went to a Chainsmokers concert with my daughters. Okay. And so I don't know if you know the Chainsmokers, right? So it's pretty much two guys, right? In a sold out arena. I noticed there were 14 tractor trailers. I was like, that's a lot, right? But that's the way big production goes these days.
Yep.
So I go in there, and there are these giant video walls above stage right, stage left, and on the stage that are moving throughout the night up and down or back and forward. And there's all this video content going on while these two guys are performing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that's very interesting. So my friend Barry Leff of Beaver Productions, one of the oldest independent concert promoters existing today, with a home office out of New Orleans, and with an office here in Memphis, he was the promoter for the show. So I called him and I went backstage. And I'm like, Barry, you got to show me around. I got to see this. So I look at it and I'm like, it's steel and motors, right? Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's just steel and motors. And these guys assemble and disassemble this every day, oof, right? Hence the 14 trucks, right?
Yep.
And I'm like, wait a minute. What if we take that Hub idea and build steel and motors and make it come into play so it can go all the way to the front, we can show video content, or it can be in the back and it could have digital content, right? As maybe a backdrop or anything. Yeah. Sky's the limit, right?
Right.
And then I thought about, you know, if we did that now, it's unimaginable how we could, what it could be used for in the future.
Yeah. And you don't have to set it up and take it down every day either.
No. And I mean, we all know that a screen, despite the fact that, you know, some people might think that this is bad for the human race, but the use of a screen, of an interface, is certainly part of the daily life of just about everybody in the world. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. And so I'm like, there's no telling what we could use in the future. So I was trying to think, like, you know, what about 10, 5, 15 years from now? What, you know, there is a tool, a mechanism, it's electronic, it's performance related, that we would install into this project. And then lastly, and I think this is important, in and around the thinking, my friend Dave DePeters of Iris Orchestra told me about a venue in Vienna that was projecting a concert outside of the venue that's inside.
Okay.
And I'm like, huh, that's interesting. And so I started to kind of poke around about that. I said, well, what if we installed cameras inside the indoor theater and push the content outside, right? Which was the big, actually the kind of the big selling point to the major contributors to that helped us, which was, this is an audience builder for us and all of our users. Mm-hmm. So imagine this. So you've got a symphony orchestra inside who is dying to figure out how to grow their audience to a more youthful audience. And every one of them in America is trying to figure that out and has been trying to do that. And many of them are doing a good job of it, but it's very challenging. So you got this orchestra playing, let's say it's a matinee, it's inside and there's a bunch of people in there and they have jackets on and they're a certain age predominantly, right? And there's a lot of people out there that think that that's not for me, right? Mm-hmm. That's for somebody else. And a performing arts center is artsy fartsy and it's not for me, right?
Yeah.
I can say that. Oh, yeah. And so, so imagine that's happening and there's the Grove is filled with a bunch of people on a beautiful afternoon and mom and dad come with little Johnny and little Susie and they meet their friends and dad's having a beverage, mom's talking to her friend, and they're in some lawn chairs, and they're wearing comfortable clothes, and Johnny and Susie are playing with their friends. And she notices that, you know, Susie's really kind of interested, you know? Mm-hmm. And Susie says something to mom, you know, like, you know, maybe she likes the cello. And so the parent might be like, well, I don't go to classical music, right? Well, maybe I'll take Susie next time they're here, or maybe I'll go buy a ticket and sit in the back, mm-hmm. you know, right now.
Right.
And, cause she would never take Susie and cause she might squirm, right? Squirm and seed, make noise, you know, when you can't make any noise.
Yeah, right. What else is there to do here? Can I run around?
Yeah.
Right. And then, so suddenly that, you know, we saw that as an opportunity for us and for others. And then the, you know, the concert promoter in me was like, okay, well I can put a big act inside. Like, who's one of our most, Jason Isbell, used to live in Memphis. He's a Americana artist living in Nashville and he's really popular in this market.
Okay.
I was like, I could call an act like Isbell or Lyle Lovett and do a deal that says, okay, we're going to fill up inside. Like we're going to sell that out in a second. So let's sell the inside ticket at X. Let's sell the outside ticket at Y, you know? Mm-hmm. A cheaper ticket, but people want to go to the Grove and they just want to get some, they think the idea is pretty cool. So I can take my capacity of 854 and add a potential 1200 to the outdoor at a cheaper, lower price ticket. Yeah. Without building a 2000 seat hall.
Right.
Which these days costs like $30 million, right?
Yep.
So that's the story of how that product, your product, was inserted and has enhanced our project greatly. And I don't think that there's another one in the world that is installed like ours is in terms of being able to move upstage and downstage mm-hmm. and concurrent with that, be able to broadcast live from the facility next door.
Definitely. I think I love the example of this is why I love these podcast episodes. Because right. if I kind of see like the picture and how you have it set up, that tells me one thing. But hearing your story here about how you can either use it for just outdoor or enhancing whatever event is going on inside. I love that idea because if it's like a beautiful sunny day out there, I'm not into classical music. But yeah, if I'm walking around with my kids and it's a different, like, I would say cheap, but a cheaper ticket than what it would be to go inside. And I know there's stuff going on out there in lawn chairs. I'm 100 more times more likely to come in there and listen to it and check that out.
Yeah, certainly you are. I will give credit where credit is due. The New World Symphony Center in South Beach, Miami, has been broadcasting their classical music exclusive organization. Highest level, beautiful $200+ million building in Miami. It's all white. They use a projection system, very expensive projection system, and they broadcast concerts from inside outside. They have 14+ cameras installed in the walls. It's very, very innovative indoor space.
Yeah.
It's this indoor space is completely 100% convertible into a variety of different settings. Howard Herring, I believe, is the director. He was very, very nice to me. I went down there to kind of learn what, you know, and he had me meet with 5 different employees as we began to think about how projecting from inside to outside would work. And they're very, very innovative. A funny little part of that story, when I visited him, and he was so open and to sharing information, he said he had these little stickers behind him on his credenza. He said, okay, so you're the, I'm going to make up the number. You're the 277th person from the 143rd different venues around the world that have come to us to ask us questions about our organization. In our facility.
Wow. Yeah. And it sounds like you looked at all these different places and drew from these different experiences, and you took a piece from this one, you took a piece from this one, and you kind of brought it all together and said, this is the kind of a unique thing we want to implement at our venue with this piece from here and this piece from there, and to kind of make it your own. So kind of what is your favorite feature of that new display system that you have there?
My favorite feature is I got the 6mm.
The high resolution part of it?
There you go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll blow your mind when you see that for the first time. If you're an industry person, it's very, very interesting, right? It's like, oh, wow, that's incredible. I have to also add that, you know, the layperson, right, who comes, buys a ticket, goes to the event, sees it. I still have the person who's like, they want to talk about something else besides, hey, you ought to do this movie. I'm like, do you have any idea what it took to show this thing? You know what I mean? They quickly forget.
Licensing?
They just kind of quickly forget about how unique of the environment that they're in.
They were comfortable to the point where they were starting to think of it like their own living room, like, right, they're over at your buddy's house
or a personal movie theater.
Like, can you just put that on quick? You made them feel uncomfortable, right, where they felt like they could just say things like that.
Sure. Oh, and then I must add, if I had a nickel every time somebody was like, you're going to show football games, right?
Yeah. Or you the know? USC fight, I mean, or.
Right. Well, man, we're in the SEC. I mean, people, if it's not duck season, you know, it's football season.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you get a golfer in here, it's like, you're going to show the Masters, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, of course. Yeah. I'm like, we'll see. Yeah.
That's when you get like per head, isn't it? Where it's like, you got to start buying the licensing. It could be based on how many people could see it. I remember hearing from a buddy of mine that's like a bar manager saying something like that before. Like, you have to say how many people might be in your facility to watch. And sometimes that's how they price that out even.
Yeah, that's the showing of sports is very, very difficult. We did quite We've done some preliminary research, and it's not easy. The easiest thing for us to say and do right now is like, we're going to show performing art related content, mm-hmm. right? We're a performing arts center. This is not, we're not a sports bar, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that that's really important for us and our organization and the community overall. We're here for a purpose, right? We're in the arts presenting and entertainment business, and we need to stay in our sector, you know, and we need to, those are the people we're looking for, the people we're looking to share our offerings with. So we find that person out there who was not raised in and around the arts world, but stumbled into our project and said, wow, this is really, really fulfilling for me. Invite them, you know, to be a part of, you know, our organization and our mission, and give them an element in their life that maybe their parents completely ignored.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they were naturally meant to enjoy something like this. And there we go. At the end of the day, we made, you know, we completed the destiny of somebody out there that never had that chance.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I thought this is where you're going with this last question, Justin, but so you had this idea, right, of the video display, and to kind of bring that back, how you wanted to use it for outdoor events, outdoor, indoor events. With all your background stuff, I'm kind of wondering, like, when did Daktronics become a part of the discussion? Like, had you heard of us prior, or how did we get involved, and how did you reach out?
I'd heard of the name before because, you know, it's a unique spelling, right?
Yeah.
And you've been around a long time, and I've been in the sector, right? But I've never been, you know, shopping for a product like that.
Like, what did you type into Google? Did you type in, like, you didn't type in LED 6mm video display, right?
No, I didn't. And, but so I had a technical director. He's retired now. Richard Brewer, and Richard Brewer gets the credit. Richard Brewer, let me just 20 seconds on Richard. Richard was, you know, he'd worked first for like, I don't know, about 4 or 5 years. Then he retired, mm-hmm. and but he is an old school roadie, right?
All right.
And he'd been in the business for a really long time. And Richard Brewer has a million stories.
I bet.
Because Richard Brewer has done countless tours and shows back in the day. And I'll give you two examples of two acts that he went on tours with around the world. Okay, and you can see the diversity in Richard's life. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, remember, this is a family podcast. So just making sure the roadie stories are good. Yeah.
But, oh, yeah, I'm not going to tell a roadie story.
Yeah, okay, yeah, just making sure.
I'm just telling you who, the life that he led. Mm-hmm. Okay, so John Denver and The Clash.
Okay.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So he's not like a guy working in town, like picking up a gig when the tour comes through. He's on the road.
Wow.
With John Denver and The Clash and everybody in between. And so we're doing this project, and he's my TD, and I'm working with the architect, and I start talking about video wall, and he's like, you gotta call my buddy Kyle. He works for Daktronics. It's the best product in the world. It's American made. You call Kyle. Oh, don't mess around with anything else. I'm like, all right, I'll call your guy. That's how it started. Richard Brewer. Yeah.
Was that Kyle and Adams then? Was that kind of
Kyle Adams?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel like I'm going to ask how he knew Kyle. Like, we went from him being on the road with John Denver to knowing Kyle. Like, was Kyle also driving around the
road? Well, no, I don't know. I just think that, you know, Richard's worked in so many markets and on the road and all over the country.
Yeah.
Right. He's been in the industry forever, and somewhere he knows Kyle, and he knew about the Daktronics product. And, you know, I did some additional research, not much, but I guess I can say this. Most of what I fell into was like, yeah, you can probably find a provider who's basically going to buy a product that's made probably in China, and you're probably going to have a hard time with service and replacement. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of the American made product that was more accessible, felt like something that we wanted to kind of drill down on. And also at the time, you know, there was all this noise in the world about China and the US. I'm like, I'm not going to go to the consumer electronics show and try to find somebody who's going to sell me something, who's just a middle person. Right.
Right.
The idea of you guys being so connected to the manufacturing of the product was a giant part of our decision. I've learned working with this city government in particular, like, you don't buy the cheapest thing, buy the best thing, because if it's a significant investment, service and replacement is worth it in the long run, because we're here as a city government to provide we're public servants. We're providing a product,
right,
and we can't wait for some knucklehead that we don't know that sold us something 4 years ago to vanish.
Yeah, to wonder if there's still spare parts to even send you anymore.
Right.
Is that company
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's on back order, Mr. Chandler. I'm like, no.
I mean, an event in 3 days. I need another mod. Like,
right.
Yeah. Oh, I can drive to South Dakota and knock on your door.
That was going to be my question. Like, I doubt it hasn't been, you haven't had the chance to do it because of travel restrictions and everything right now, but coming up to Brookings and actually seeing our facilities up here.
Yeah. Yeah. Kyle had mentioned that. It's something that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Actually, I got my short list of people who I want to invite to come up there, who are major parts of, the contribution particularly to the video wall, the ones that were like, wow, that's a really good, we'd like to support that. That's a really innovative product.
Sure.
I can tell you, it was one of the more significant yet quieter by their choice contributor was the famed and our favorite corporate partner, that logistics shipping company, FedEx, headquarters here in Memphis. They were a big proponent to this product, and I certainly wanted to invite some of their leadership to come see the Daktronics. And
sure.
And I hear it's good pheasant.
I was good. Have you ever been in South Dakota before? Or in all your travels?
I had to look it up. No.
You wouldn't be the first person to say no, so that's right. Yeah.
No. You have to know that I'm half Puerto Rican, so I don't go north for very often.
Especially not in the winter, right?
Been asked at a trade show by a cab drivers, oh, where are you from? And I said, South Dakota. And they said, where's that? And I'm like, duh, it's below North Dakota. Like, I didn't know how to answer that question. Like, it's
right. Yeah. I did a booking one time for in Des Moines, Iowa, and it was a really big event called the Ragbri. And I don't know how I ended up with the client, but I sold them a New Orleans band actually. And I'm like, I'm going to go to Des Moines. I literally, it's nothing against Iowa. I had to look up where Iowa was. I'm like, I know where Illinois is because I've been, I can get to Chicago because it's connected to Missouri. but thankfully I went to Des Moines and I found out I had a college, a really good old frat brother in from college who lived in Des Moines. So I got to see good old Charlie Grask.
Nice.
I hope our executive producer Jessa is listening to this.
She's from Iowa.
Yeah. That's a good
one. I think she's probably participated in Ragbri at some point.
Sure.
Oh, that's awesome. So kind of thinking of wrapping up here a little bit, what's been some of the favorite events that you've hosted with your new video display there?
So have you done, since you've gotten the display and because of COVID, you've mentioned a lot of the movies and stuff. Have you done a mix of using it as a backdrop for live events and kind of that front of the stage for other things, or has it been mainly just kind of features on the front of the stage?
Yeah. So some of my favorite, uses of the video wall in this last, COVID era presentation. Mm-hmm. I'll say that the local opera company was the only, if you will, organization. And I wasn't surprised it was them because they're very creative and their director is very, very innovative. He got it. And they utilized the video wall as a backdrop to an operatic presentation. Okay. And it wasn't, they didn't stretch the limit and, they just didn't have the time or the resources to really, really dig deep into it. But I had them in mind when we were talking about when we were thinking about the video wall being a backdrop to a performing art related presentation. Mm-hmm. So I think they'll probably be the one that are really, really going to create an experience that utilizes that digital wall as a backdrop. I'll say just as a personal favorite, and it's a DVD I throw in there when I go often, when I show it off, but, there's a concert film called Shine a Light.
Okay.
And it's fantastic. So I can't remember what year. It could be 2011. It's the Rolling Stones in the Beacon Theater. And Martin Scorsese, if you or your listeners have never seen it, just get it today. It's fantastic. Okay. So Scorsese shot the Stones over, I believe, a two-day period of time in the Beacon Theater. And he used multiple cameras, and I think they're all film cameras, you know, mm-hmm. multiple cameras, and expanded the stage at the Beacon, which isn't a giant room, and put the Stones in there and recorded. And it has guest stars like Buddy Guy and Christina Aguilera.
Cool.
And it is very, very well produced. So when you put, you know, a 20-foot tall gyrating Mick Jagger, right, on that video wall,
yeah,
or a 20-foot tall Keith Richards leaning over, you know, looking straight at you, you know, those iconic images. That has been one of my favorite.
It sticks, right?
Yeah, I show it all the time, and it's very, very impactful. And the music, of course, is really recognizable and clean and very, very well produced. You know, the newer stuff, you know, shot with higher end production shows up very, very well, of course. And then if you go up and put like a Kool & the Gang music video up there shot in the 80s, it, you know, the product is a little, what's on the DVD has its challenges.
Yeah, whatever you put in is what's going to, like, come on to say. If it's a high res, like, newer film, it'll look different, right, than you're saying a 1980s DVD kind of thing.
Exactly. So, you know, to that point, or to your question, you know, what's been my favorite? And, well, thirdly, I will say that, you know, we need to thank a whole lot of people and organizations that have helped us in last season with the funding for the construction of the Grove, and have given us contributions during this difficult time. And before each production, we show video content that recognizes them. And, you know, it's very impactful to, you know, AutoZone is a contributor to the Grove construction. They gave us a television commercial. And so while you're sitting there waiting, eating your offering you got from your food truck in your folding chair or in your fixed seat in the VIP area, and you got an AutoZone message in front of you, that's important to AutoZone, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so we're able to thank them in that way, in a giant, giant way. This is not like me reading a curtain speech to say thank you to AutoZone. This is a 30-second, highly produced television commercial, and we can offer it without it feeling like we're showing commercials to you. Mm-hmm. It's because the display is so dynamic. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
So
you're not just doing logos. You're not just showing one logo and calling it good.
Right.
Right. No. And then in terms of the future, you know, I think I can't wait to stumble into new uses of the video display. I've always initially, and part of the project was to, you know, provide a display for digital content creators to get creative. Yep. And I'll give you one example. A friend of mine, Jonathan Kirksey, had talked to me while we were under construction. We haven't been able to do it for obvious reasons, but there is an industry out there that's the dance film industry, right?
Okay.
Yep. So dance films is a thing, and they have dance film festivals around the world, and people go to them like they would go to a film festival. But there are dance filmmakers. So, you know, we present dance here, modern dance, classical ballet.
Right.
And there's so many and tap. Tap has become big lately. And so there are these really innovative dance filmmakers that take a setting and a scene and some dancers and create these 5 to 12 minute videos. And they have film festivals that people go to, and it always ends up with, you know, people partying and dancing and having a good time. Mm-hmm. One thing you always know about the dance community is they're all beautiful people, right? They're all fit. And so the dance film festivals are in, like, you know, Chile and Hamburg, right? Miami and LA, where the beautiful people go. But we want to do a dance film festival here because it is certainly connected to our mission. And when you go online and start looking up dance films and see the really, really innovative ones, they're really super, super cool. So we look forward to that.
And it sounds like you've got a lot of different things going on. You've got some great ideas going forward and different ways that you plan on using this display. So I want to thank you for coming on today and sharing your story of your history and how you got to where you're at and all the different things that have happened and how you've used the display during COVID even to support your community. It's been great to hear about all of that. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I appreciate you having me on. Your company has been more than a partner. You know, it was easy to do business. It was easy to get it installed. And I certainly appreciate zero pushback on our innovative, I think, idea of mounting it on a hoist and putting it and without saying, nobody ever said, you know, this kid's really crazy. This is never going to work. I was waiting for somebody to go, this is not going to work. I'm like, oh, but see, these are the guys that made the round one in the Falcon Stadium. So,
We got quite a few engineers here. They usually can figure out some pretty interesting things.
Or they accept the challenge.
Yeah, there you go. That's a better way of saying it, Justin.
Thanks, man.
Well, I can't wait to come to South Dakota just to meet some of the engineers because I'm sure they're going to maybe just not really have much of a reaction because they see so many interesting things. But I really want one of them to go like, oh, so you were that guy. You know, I thought that idea was really cool, but I probably won't. It's probably, they're probably a lot like IT guys, but nothing against engineers. But
we have an internal audience of the podcast. They may be listening to this as well right now.
Yeah,
I hope so. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen in the engineering department. You made me look like a hero.
There you go. I'm sure they'll love to hear that one.
I'll end by saying this on that front, and I would use this a lot. You know, when the project was underway, I was like, you know, and this is what the wall will do, and this is what the remote control cameras will do. We'll build these audiences. So, like, we are either brilliant or stupid, but we're gonna find out soon enough.
There you go.
Well, I would say it turned out to be a very brilliant idea, Paul.
We can't wait for the new normal or the new future. And I think technology will be a part of our future, and we are set and ready thanks to Dectronics.
All right.
Thank you very much for joining us again, Paul.
Thank you.
Okay, y'all take care. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dectronics Experience Podcast. Please subscribe at your favorite place to listen to podcasts to keep up with our latest episodes.